Welcome to Solutions from the Yard, a candid discussion about life behind bars and its effect on society. We'll discuss reintegration or re-entry back into the community post-incarceration. Your host for this episode is Michael Dickerson L.
Welcome to Solutions from the Yard. Picking up from our last show, does job placement and workforce development programs, do they reduce recidivism? And we're going to pick back up on when we was talking about Title VII. And we got touched into the Title VII does not protect ex-offenders. It only protects the protected class, mm-hmm. but it don't have a clause in there for ex-offenders. Chuck, since we understand the Title VII don't protect us, we are still considered commercial property then?
Yeah, and that goes into the subject title of the show. This is why these programs don't reduce recidivism, because they can't prepare us for the obstacles that we're going to be confronted by. Institutional racism. They're not going to prepare us for discrimination. We see right now that as the, what the protected class is, and we see right now that when you, if you have a criminal record, you're not a part of the protected class. So I can discriminate against you, your religion. As we was talking about, a guy was hired at a certain store, and he wanted to get his have his religious service. He wanted to do Juma. Even if he wanted to pray on the job, they told him he couldn't pray on the job. Then because he's not protected because of his criminal record, he couldn't pray on the job. So yeah, we are actually considered chattel. The prison industrial complex, mass incarceration, this is a new form of slavery. I think you outlined that very succinctly in our last show, where you made the connection between Dred Scott and the fact that we're not a protected class. You saying we're not a protective class, automatically it gives the employee, no matter what we offer, it gives the employee say, well, I don't have to treat you fair. I don't. You know, I can treat you however I want to treat you, because one, I know you need this job, low income as it is. And so now you put me in a position where I'm inclined to recidivate. The program I went through that taught me job readiness, the program I went through that taught me interview skills, the program I went through that taught me how to dress, the program I went through, all these programs, they meant well. But when it came to going on a job and being confronted with this discrimination and this bias and this racism, no.
That's a good point. What you think, did you?
I think we're going to always be commercial property when there's really no financial independency plan for a return to citizen. Meaning, if I give you a true blueprint of financial independency, I lose my income. Mm. So that's why I always try to go to the root of it. There's so much that need to be done, and things need to be rewritten, amended, laws, because they don't sit to today's if we don't change it. Because reason why I'm saying, because if we allow to keep sitting there and not and sitting in these books and don't address them, and we are the ones that continues being harmed by these laws and these titles to today, you know what I'm saying? Because there's no true blueprint for us that we could work at all these jobs and anyone's jobs. Like you said, we're going to be faced with racism, bias, gender discrimination, all types of things, everything. But if there's really not no real financial independency plan for returning citizens to full career path so they can have a real livable wages, there's really, we're going to always be, like you said, we're going to always be commercial property. And this is a big issue that's not being addressed, you know, because there's a lot of money in it in both ways.
Yeah, that right there, really, you both of you brothers touched on some things that really kind of like opened my eyes up just from hearing that. Mm-hmm. Because Dietrich mentioned something about money.
Yeah.
And then you was mentioning, like, far as commercial property, the laws. Now, we know Title VII is a part of the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
That's right.
And this is a law. and see, like Deidre was saying, man, what's really affecting us is that, you know, the government is throwing out a lot of money, mm-hmm. but they not making no laws. See, and that's the thing. See, they think that you know, just because we throw out a lot of grant money for return to citizens, you know, for these programs and stuff like that, it's automatically assumed to the naked eye or the public, like, they really doing something. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't changed the laws,
there you go.
See, it don't do nothing for us if you haven't changed the laws, mm-hmm. because the money that you are giving really is just given to the you know, like you call them the poverty pimps, mm-hmm. to basically put a band-aid on our real issue.
That's right.
Our real issue is that, man, we come out of post-slavery.
Come on.
We come out of post-slavery and then turn around, you know, you haven't changed no laws that really say, hey, you no longer a slave.
That's right.
You no longer commercial property. Mm-hmm. And see, once they do that, now you still are subject to all the mistreatment and abuses that, you know, that the citizens care to bestow upon you, because now you don't have no protection. See, the law protects you.
Mm-hmm.
You have certain rights and protection that's given to you by the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And when we was written out of the Constitution way back during the time of slavery, we didn't have that protection.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the importance of, you know, laws being put in place, because that give you a certain protection.
Mm-hmm.
You just giving us, giving organizations grant money don't give you no protection. It's just, you know, like you say, people get the stipend chasing, you know, and stuff like that, but it don't really put no real protection on you. And that's something that really need to be looked at.
Yeah.
You know, the change in the laws really need to be looked at. And, you know, I went to the, another research finding on the U.S. Department of Justice, and, this research and finding right here, you know, really, you know, kind of like open up my eyes too. And it's based on race and the geographic of opportunity in the post-prison labor market.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the findings says that we find that post-prison employment is associated more with proximity to workers in felon-friendly industries than with proximity to employers, because formerly incarcerated whites are more likely to live near current workers in felon-friendly industries. The geography of opportunity in the post-prison labor market contributes to the racial disparity in post-prison employment. So it's basically saying, like, far as when it comes to ex-offenders, you know, whites are going to get more jobs than blacks.
Mm-hmm.
What you say about that, Chuck?
And I listened to what you were saying, right? And first of all, we know that we're dealing with the Justice Department study, so we know it's going to have a slant, because they get their grant money to continue to do what they do. But in regards to why whites will get more job, they got more opportunity. They get, and even when we in prison, right? When you're in prison, you see that they get the clerk jobs. Mm. When you're in prison, when you go in the industry, Unicor, they got the more skilled jobs in that environment.
Mm.
So I'm giving you an example. I'm in one industry. We actually making tags, and the white guy that's running the industry is a prisoner. And he good friend of ours. So he got all the people that was in Supermax, and, you know, he knew all of us. So we got all of us in the industry. But when you went to the office, it was him and three other white dudes.
Mm.
Right? And we pressing tags. So when you came to where we was at, the foreman was you. And so when you say, look, everybody got you, Deidre, you gotta press out 2,200 tags. That's your within an hour. That's your workload. Cause we gotta put out something like 25,000 tags that day.
Mm.
Right? So you around when you like everybody like, oh, come on, man, you messing up. Come on, get the stepping. Tote that bar, zip that bell. Right? Okay. But when the same white guy is out right now, I just seen him on his Facebook. He just did an interview with somebody. He got a book he wrote, right? He getting all the accolades. He ain't not a bad dude, but he white.
Mm.
And the bias that exists allows him to do that. Now, the same people that was around him in the system, right? We grant chasing. You know what I'm saying? So we writing up grants and we getting a stipend. Oh, I'm going to give you $75,000. I'm going to give you $1.5 million. That ain't no goddamn money. But guess what it's for? It's to give, it's to do the training. I'm going to train you how to go talk to somebody. I'm going to train you how to write a resume. I'm going to train you how to jump through the hoop. But when you go to the job, I'm not going to be able to prepare you how to deal with this racism and its discrimination, because automatically, the bias going to create a situation where I'm not going to get it, because Title VII say I'm not a protected class.
So basically, from what I gather from what you said, you know, they get the jobs that are more career orientated, long lasting jobs. We get the little part time, or you know, the jobs that you know have a certain time limit.
That's right.
You know, and you know, or the hard labor jobs.
Or the hard labor jobs.
Exactly.
We competing with other people of color that's been disadvantaged. You know, disadvantaged. They come from another country, and I don't hate on them. They work hard, but they put us in a competition. I'm competing with you to lift these bricks all the way up on the 12th floor. You gonna take all the bricks up on the 12th floor and the 15th floor because you want the job. I'm saying like, man, I'm a returning citizen, so I'm gonna go back to what I'm comfortable with.
Right.
And I might try to, you know, like tweak it. I just take the package and set it on the corner. I don't mess with it. I just make sure nobody else mess with it. And I'm getting $2,500 for that.
Yeah, you just came up with a solution of trying to do the wrong thing right.
Yeah, the wrong thing right. Exactly.
Exactly.
And we got plenty of examples of it in every federal prison throughout the United States and the world where it don't work.
Did you? What you think about that?
I think a lot. I think a lot about everything, and the thing about it is that I want to piggyback off what Charles said, and I was sitting here thinking when he was speaking about the jobs that was available in prison, and when I was really, I never really paid attention to it, but I seen it, but then I brushed it off because it didn't affect me.
That's right, come on.
Like
come on,
that.
Come on.
It ain't affect me
come
like
on,
that.
Come on,
like, I,
come
care,
on.
I don't yeah. care if Johnny in there. I don't care. It don't affect me.
Yeah.
But because at the end of the day, I'm all right.
That's right.
But for real, it did affect me.
That's right.
Unto my beknownst that Johnny was getting enough money that he had to call home to his family and put a burden on his family to get it. Because the job he had in the office. See?
Come on.
See, I'm going to give you these jobs because you're of this certain class of people. And you're making some sense off a dollar that I know you got to call home for a dollar, put a strain on your family. And I know you don't come from nothing anyway. Because I read your...
PSI report,
that's right?
That's right.
So this is the thing, and that, I'm just saying, I'm correlating, now take that same correlation to the streets.
That's come on.
To society.
Come on.
Because that was a society, and they're operating
still
under the same thing.
Society.
It's just we're in a bigger one.
That's right.
We're in a bigger society now, and the same thing happens. I put all the job, the prison-friendly, plantation-type jobs way out. From the metropolitan area, that want to hire the returning citizens, them jobs are way out. Returning citizens don't have no transportation, nowhere to get there. But I gotta find a way to get there, and the burden that it puts on me, and the strain that it put me, don't make me want to go there the next morning,
right?
Because it's so much to get there, and then when I get there, I gotta deal with all this stuff. So
come on,
this is a real issue.
That's right.
And these are brothers and sisters that's probably right now on a train somewhere, probably going out. Nowhere, Virginia, or too far, Maryland.
Yeah, come on.
You know, speaking of this right now, that's going through this right now. To a job that's not paying him a real living wage, and it's not going to put him on the path to financial freedom. Okay. And this is part of the plan, the racial stigma. And like I always said, this is part of the economy.
Come on.
This is part of the economy plan to have the unprotected, back to Dred Scott, the unprotected people stay unprotected even under the unprotected clause. So how can you fight through these burdens when you're fighting through all this? This is some serious stuff.
Yes, it is,
you know,
serious,
what I'm saying?
Bro,
so we know and don't speak. And we don't want to just make this about we're sitting here crying and saying a lot of this, because there's a lot of successful stories that did go through that, right? So that's my point.
Why we unprotected Clay? Why the unprotected other unprotected?
Yeah, and the thing about when you facing that many barriers.
Come on, that's right.
And you at a, when you know this job don't have no really true ending or beginning, right? And it's just you trying. Because I know I got to do a job because I don't want them to put me on ankle monitors.
That's right.
Yeah, these are birds, you know what I'm saying? And like you said, we're fighting a whole different, another game where we got a whole another, a whole, and like I don't speak against no other religion or race of people on that, but the jobs that's available now for returning citizens, they have the same jobs that's available for the undocumented immigrants and the immigrants.
Yeah.
So, that's another barrier that you got to go against. Because I'm 40-something years old, just doing 25-something years out of prison. You put me on a construction site with all these young brothers that's lifting, and you telling me I got to keep up with them. It's impossible. I don't care how much in shape I'm eventually, my body going to be like, man, you can't keep doing it. This is a young man's game. This is the thing, part of recidivism. We put you in the spider web and see if you get out. If you only have a certain amount of time, because you're going to end up
being consumed.
There you go.
Yeah. And I agree. Because when you look at the, like you said, to go back to your point about the how we got to compete. So you put us in a competitive environment where we got to compete for.
Yes.
For a job, but more importantly, we're not getting a living wage.
Yes.
If we're getting a job, we might be getting a job. We might get it from a particular agency to say they're gonna take. If you're getting $15 an hour, they're gonna take $5 of the dollar, so you only gonna get $10 an hour. So now you gotta give them some money for giving you put you there, but the program didn't prevent me from thinking about recidivating because. One, it didn't take into account that the conditions that I'm under, the stress and the pressure I'm going to be under. If I'm paying rent or if I'm paying for a room, if I'm paying child support, I'm paying something. And if I'm not getting a living wage and I'm not being encouraged to have a career, so what I'm involved with right now, if this is what I'm involved with right now is not moving me towards a career, I don't have no interest in holding on to it because, well, like you just outlined, one, I'm competing against younger people of different ethnicity, and I don't have no issues with them, but I'm competing with them. But you know, as an employer, that I got these people on the plantation. They got a different vested interest. They're gonna do everything I tell them to do because their vested interest is different than yours. So when you say I'm not gonna take them up there. I got five of them going to take it up there. And guess what? Bye-bye. So, you know, as we outlined a minute ago, you know, like this discrimination and this biasness that come out of this Justice Department study, they slanted it to say one way, but the reality is, no, these programs don't reduce recidivism. When you're dealing with like where the jobs are at, and like did you say nowhere Maryland or can't find you Virginia?
Yeah.
When we forced to go there and then work and get a minimum wage, I ain't got money to buy the train. The train gonna cost me $50 a month.
Oh no, that's a week.
Okay, $50 a week. Yeah,
that's a week. I want to say one thing, and Mike test on this about the laws about how to change, and you want to change. The minds of the people tap into the dollar. when you're telling them, hey, if they don't, if you don't give this certain amount of these people career paths, you, your organization, your business is going to be reprimanded. It going to be some disciplinary actions. These are laws that need to be put in place. Mm-hmm. This is how you protect the unprotected. But they don't want to do that. Rest, brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what y'all was saying is very important, because when you really kind of like, let's go all the way back to, you know, when we first initially started in training our voices. We went all the way back to slavery, then post-slavery, the civil rights movements. And, you know, it was always about how we had to advocate all the way from, you know, from slavery to post-slavery until now.
Came on these shows.
And, you know, it's just sad to see how they are still training us to be slaves. And when you really look at it, like, they're preparing you to be in these type of employment places that we still doing slave labor.
Mm-hmm.
They preparing you for that. And not it's no smite on, you know, the some of these workforce developments. They just getting money to help you do a resume, you know, when you do an interview with an employer. That's the only thing they doing, but they are not funding these places to adept you with a career.
That's right.
See, and that's what we really need. We need longevity.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't need you going to be working it, digging this ditch until your knees go out on you, you know, or you know, you just go, you going to get so tired of stacking cans and all the women laughing at you because you got a smock on, and you, it's eventually just going, you're going to give up.
Yeah.
And see, that's the thing about with what I see in it. You know, that's why, you know, the increase of the recidivism is so high, because you basically still you disrespecting me. You still reducing me to commercial property. You still put me in a place where, as though I don't have no pride in what I'm doing.
Mm.
I don't feel good about myself.
Mm.
You know, and it leads you right back into what you think you can do to make you feel good about yourself. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So therefore, you know, it's very disparaging when you really look at it, and really why we dissecting that right now, mm-hmm. because it just, nothing has really changed. You know, if you don't have some form of certification or a degree, you can't start with the big dogs.
Mm.
And that's how I go.
Yeah.
You gonna be here, we gonna be here.
Amen.
You see what I'm saying? And that's just something that really we have to have a voice. And that's why I'm so glad, man, we had this voice that we can put some of these things out and have people open their eyes to what really going on. Now this called Solutions from the Yard.
Yeah.
So let's, you know, we ain't gonna keep just beating a dead horse. Let's get into some of these solutions that that we feel as though that should be implemented when it come to this. And you know, the Department of Justice, they also have some strategies for employers to look at in far as like assisting us, and you know, and it also gives us some some things that we should do, because like you was discussing earlier, Chuck, about as far as how we should go about getting a job to prepare ourselves, even though we are in this workforce that's very biased, still is something that we must do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the strategies it says one, identify the industries in your region that are expected to grow. Two, learn about career paths in these fields. Then three, identify the legal and regulatory sanctions that can impact people with criminal records. So that's another thing that, like, when we do go out and try to find a job, these are some of the things that we got to do. See, you know, what these companies that are prison friendly, ex-con friendly, and then see what they, you know, research them. Like, you know, how long they keep their employees, do little certain like stuff like that before you even delve in what they're going to be paying. Do you think that you can even use this pay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, see, these some of the things that we have to research before we even just jump into a job just saying, man, I'm going to take this and you know, not knowing what's going to be the outcome. Mm-hmm. And Chuck, give me some solutions. What you think?
And you know what? I'm going to go into something that's taking place right now. Justice Lab, it's an organization that's they're advocating expungement. And when we looked at Title VII, because we're not a protected class, because we got a criminal record, then expungement would be a good solution to get our criminal records expunged. That would open the door for them not to be able to revisit that, and we would become a protected class in regard to the workforce. So we'd be able to utilize the EEOC if we have a complaint. So I'm encouraging that you get your record expunged for the reason of not only that, but to get to have a clean record. We, you know, because every time something go on, they go back to your record and they put your record up there, and your record, they TV say, okay, this person had 20 gun charges, but they might have been 20 years old. So if you get your record expunged, that do give you a modicum of like being a upright individual in society's eyes. So I would say my solution would be look at expungement because of Title VII.
And that'll put you on the even playing field.
It ain't going to take you, it's going to put you on even playing field in terms of you not being considered chattel in the workforce. You at least will have a voice that you can use and have opportunity to grieve any type of injustice you see taking place on the work.
DJ, what's one of your solutions?
Well, you know, my solution is starting with the businesses and the organizations within the D.C. metropolitan area and getting them to find, helping to get some type of legislation that's gone that protects and put a blueprint and put a career pathway, a real career pathway for individuals that's interested in these particular careers and organizations and businesses. They've truly put an actual workforce for these workforce development in these organizations for returning citizens. See, I could always go through another organization and do a workforce development, but I'm doing workforce development for something else. Mm-hmm. I want to do workforce development for the actual career that I want to do.
That's right, that's right.
Not for something, you know.
That's
so
right. Good point.
That's one of my main things is change the law. Because once you change the law, you change the mind of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And once they see it in writing, they know, hey, this is law. I cannot keep this guy for 12 weeks and keep lying to him every day. Hey, I'm going to hire you. And don't give him a real chance at my business of being successful. There should be some type of a punishment, a penalty to these. Because you're giving people false hope.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put false hope back into these miserable, toxic situations, you're asking for a cake bomb. Mm-hmm. So why would you do that? You put a lot of these people. So the bill, I think there's something needs to be in writing. My solution is, hey, the mayor, I think we need to revisit a lot of the stuff when it comes to the hiring policies of returning citizens. I think we need to revisit these bonds that's being issued to these organizations for hiring certain individuals. Mm-hmm. That's probably getting these bonds and now they're person on their staff a returning citizen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my solution. We need to tackle it, get the community to buy into, hey, if you want the community, you want everybody in the community to be successful and to be upright to citizens, let's put a blueprint pathway so that we can give them true financial independence.
Mm. Amen. That's all.
There you have it. Solutions from the Yard. Thank you for tuning in.
You've been listening to Solutions from the Yard. This podcast is presented by Voices for a Second Chance, a comprehensive reentry program that provides culturally appropriate, trauma-informed, gender-specific, and peer-based services. For more information, go to info@vscdc.org or visit our website at www.vscdc.org.